Welcome into the Sports Buffoons Podcast.
Welcome on in, everybody, to another day, another Saturday, Sunday, whatever day it is of NBA playoffs. Guys, my name's Tanner Dawson of the Whiskey Sports Podcast and the Sports Buffoons. Welcome on in, Scott Cobe, SJ Cobe 1 on Twitter of Let's Talk Sports. Scott, what's up, dude?
Not much. It isn't basketball weather up here in Boston, so it's 80 degrees now.
How much?
It's almost 80 right now.
80? Man, too. Almost there, guys. Yeah. Welcome to In the Hoop, your weekly NBA news, playoff, whatever you want to call it, update show where we go about stuff. So excited to get this in there with. JG isn't able to join us this weekend, but he will be back, of course, next weekend, ready to go talk about some of these series, possibly entering round three. It's insane. We already got a comment here. Bakken's out here saying Lakers in six. I think the NBA wants that thing to go seven, but we'll talk about that a little later here. So there's one series I want to talk about that goes on today about 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern, the Suns Nuggets. And it's an interesting series too, because you got a team with a two-time MVP, such a dynamic depth as well. Jamal Murray has been killer out there. And then the other side, you have two or three great starters, you could say. Outside of that, there's not much depth there. But yet, a guy like Devin Booker, who we've seen in past years keep these guys in games, he's still doing it out here with putting everything on the line every game. And it doesn't seem like he's getting any help, not even from, our guy KD out there. KD at 39, Booker at 47 this last game for the win. Ayton only had 4 points and 9 boards, not even double digits out here. And between KD and Booker, they essentially did enough to overcome that, get that victory that they needed at home so badly. But is this sustainable? That's the thing. That's what I want to know, Scott. Is this thing sustainable where the Suns can still stage this comeback?
I don't think so, because the Nuggets, all they have to do is take one of them away, not both of them, and they'll be in good shape. We said before the series, Durant and Booker are going to have to score 70% of the 70 points combined in games to win. They had 86, and that was about 75% of what the Suns put up for points. So it's clearly evident that if Denver can stall or shut down one of them, that Phoenix is in a whole world of trouble. So,
right. And we kind of look at it too, right? So DeAndre Ayton's probably the key here of this whole thing. We're talking about Chris Paul being the key. He's out hurt, right? He's not the key anymore. DeAndre Ayton was the key last year in that Mavericks game. He's also the key here in this Suns Nuggets series for these guys to stage a comeback. Yep. Now he's being benched is what I saw for this game. He's starting off the bench. And it's a message probably too late by now of the way he's performing. But, what is it with him? Is he just soft in the playoffs? Or what are we seeing? Obviously, he signed a big contract. They were going to move on from him. They signed the contract with him, kept him around, I think, was the max, right? This past offseason. Yeah. So the Suns obviously have him for a bit. But what in the world is wrong with Ayton? And why is he getting bullied right now?
So they're asking him to cover Jokic. That's a no-go for me. You're asking him to cover two-time MVP. He can't do it by himself. He needs help, number one. Number two, he either A, doesn't look for a shot in games, or B, he's shooting from around the foul line area. And to me, that's a no-go too, which means you don't have an inside presence against Denver, which means all Denver has to do is guard the perimeter, and they're going to win game, and they're going to win easily. So Ayton has got to learn to go down inside, and he's an undersized center. I don't think he's 7 feet. I think he's like 6'10", six, something like that. So he's an undersized center. So when he comes up against Jokic, who's 7 feet, he's not going to have success. And you're seeing that. So his defensive, he's put all his intensity to the defensive side. And when the offensive side comes, he can't score. He can't play. So
is it just a mismatch, or is it more of an effort thing? Because I feel like in college when he was in Arizona, we saw that at times when he knew he had the advantage in some kind of matchup, it was a different way. But now he's going against somebody that is better than him. a little bigger than him as well. Like, is it just an effort? Like, oh, you know, this guy's gonna be better than me, and I'm just gonna crap down. So,
well, I wonder if he's a little bit more overrated than people give him, you know, talk about him. I wonder if he's really not as good as everybody says. And I don't see him as a max player. I don't see him as a max player in the NBA. I just don't. So I think it's both. I think it's effort, and I think he has the out. Hey, I'm covering the two-time MVP. What do you guys want me to do? I'm not getting any help, nothing. So he has that out, which is flimsy at best, I think. But I think it's effort, you know.
Yeah, like Bakken says here, 6'10", and no balls and in heart.
Exactly. So
that's an issue, you know, that we see in some guys at this point in their careers, you know, especially after a big deal. It's like they're all that money, but now you're really not living up to it. And this is a move that was pretty questionable on the Suns move on the Suns this offseason of why did they keep him around? They probably thought he was a bigger piece in the team. Sure. Big guy, a nice big guy down there, down low that, you know, did well for you for most of it. But really, you know, left when it was time to advance in the playoffs. And I think what we're seeing here is now this almost a regression that continues in the playoffs for this, because you can't have a guy, if you're trying to get to the finals, and you know Booker and all of those guys right now, including KD, that's the guy that's out here trying to win, and he's going to do everything in his power to do it. And he tried to go over to Ayton, and Ayton just kind of shushed him away. Like, I don't want to hear it.
And the thing is, you can't trade him. Can't trade him because of his contract. Nobody wants him. They look at him in the playoffs. They say, hey, if we get to the playoffs, he's not the one piece away that we need to get to the finals. So this stuck with him, and he needs to stop performing, because if he doesn't, you're really going to pay a ninth or a tenth player on your team millions of dollars like that.
You're going to have a max contract coming off the bench is what you're going to see. Yep. So, like, I guess thinking about this too, like, does this open the door for Booker? Does this open the door for Booker to say, hey, you know, if you can't get this changed, I'm going elsewhere, you know?
I think it does. I really do. Because Chris Paul is not getting any younger. He's not. You know, KD's there, obviously, yes. And that's a great thing for Booker. But who else is there? If Ayton doesn't start performing, there's no chance.
Campaign's injured, you know?
Yeah. There's no chance they're successful with the construction of this team now. They almost got to say, Durant and Booker, you're our top two, and then just blow up the rest and try to rebuild it as quickly as they possibly can. So
yeah, Devin Booker's going into next year as his final season on his contract, his big contract. And I wouldn't be surprised if we come, maybe not even like start, we'll start the season maybe with the Suns. But if we start going, you know, towards the trade deadline and nothing's changed and it's still the same way as the Suns have been, I could see Booker trying to get out of it and going, you know, get the sign and trade deal with somebody. So I don't know. Like, I just feel like this Suns team, yes, they got the W. It wasn't that really that pretty anyways to get that W. Nuggets kind of fell flat a little bit as well. You know, everybody, I mean, you had Porter Jr., Joker and Murray, 21, 30 and 32. Joker and Porter Jr. with 12 and 17 on the boards. Joker had 17 assists, a 30-17-17 game. You know, the bench didn't have the greatest of days either there, but I just felt like it was a little short. You know, you had your dominant guys make plays on the Sun side, and you sneak through, right? You sneak the win in.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, man. I just feel like this isn't sustainable. This isn't going to be sustainable for this comeback.
And Phoenix is favored today, and the wrong team is favored in my mind.
They were favored last game too.
I know that. Phoenix is just a mess right now. It's a complete mess. And I don't, you know, if Booker doesn't score 47, that's a lot to ask. And Durant doesn't have 40. There's no way.
I mean, that's consistent too. Like, you need to score 80 points to even have a chance to win any of these games.
Right.
It's insane. So, but hey, it's a matchup we're going to be, of course, watching very closely. You know, this thing might be finished by the time we talk next Saturday. So
absolutely.
Yeah, next Saturday, Sunday. So that's going to be quite an interesting case there. But it's just a series that intrigues me, because you see the dominance on both sides of the ball. Just one with a little bit more weapons and ability to rest their players than the other. Oh, man. Oh, man.
Yeah. And when you look at it, remember, Jamal Murray had an awful game in game two. and the Nuggets still won the game. So Murray could have a subpar game, and the Nuggets have so many pieces around them that they could sustain it. Whereas Phoenix, if Booker or Durant have a bad game, there's nobody around them to sustain it. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly right. All right. So let's move on here. Let's talk a little what the game last night, the Golden State Los Angeles Lakers game. This series going on. I think this series is interesting because it's either going to be a blowout at the end or nothing, right? It's how it's going to go. Yeah. Lakers won big first game. Golden State won big the second game. Lakers pulled away in the fourth quarter, late about third, fourth quarter, and sustained that and kept that going. It's interesting too because you had D'Angelo Russell, D'Lo, who we haven't seen in a while, right? He showed up yesterday, especially in the first half there, and continued his dominance there. James finished with 21, Davis with 25 and 13 boards, by the way. Reeves with 10 and Russell with 21. And it's always seemed the Lakers need a out of the nowhere blue player to step up for the game. It's not, LeBron and Davis are going to do their thing. But I think, having a guy like D'Lo, who, again, we haven't seen him in a while, show up. He showed up big yesterday. And the bench here, Lonnie Walker and Schroeder each had 12 to kind of complement that. But I thought they played very well against Golden State. They made the right adjustments. Yeah. Vanderbilt wasn't on Curry for all game long like it was game two, which was the right move because why would you throw him on Curry, for God's sake? But yeah, we'll talk a little bit. I'm going to talk a little bit about the referees and all these matchups here a little later too. But like, what are you taking away from this game three?
LeBron didn't shoot the ball the first 10, 11 minutes of the game. I was like, is he taking a shot yet? And I looked at the box score in the first quarter. I'm like, no. And he didn't score until 9 minutes left in the second quarter. So, and the Lakers were playing really well because D'Angelo Russell started off really well. Anthony Davis, again, X factor in the series. He plays well. The Lakers are going to be in good shape. Plays bad. The Lakers are going to have trouble. So between those two guys without LeBron, they were fine. And then Golden State just lost their poise in the second quarter. And they just teed up and everything else. So to me, Golden State, I think in the back of their minds, knows this is going to be a series. And we've got to bring our presence underneath and in the perimeter, and Curry's going to have to score 30 a game. Klay Thompson started out well, and then he just kind of fizzled out. Golden State was in that game in the second quarter. Every time the Lakers pulled away a little, Golden State caught up. And then I think it was like an 11-0 run to finish the first half, and that was ball game.
And they couldn't keep up from there, yeah.
No, they could not. So to me, it all comes down to and Steve Kerr said it at post game, we lost our poise, and we can't do that against this team. So if they lose their point, he's got to find a way to tell Draymond, hey, listen, Draymond, you got to knock it off. Because if he keeps arguing with the officials, he's going to get teed up every game, and that could be the start of a Lakers run that could cost them the game. So,
and that's the thing, right? This team is full of emotion. This Golden State team, since the beginning of this offseason, is full of just emotional stuff, right? We had the pool Draymond incident, Draymond getting the stomp in the playoffs last round. And it's, I don't know, it's just frustrating because this team, this team can win. This team shows it. We've seen it in the past. It's easy. But it's when one guy gets in the drama fest because of a bad foul call, which some of them are. Don't get me wrong. Some of them are. But you can't let it get to you. You can't let this do that. And the guy that affects the most is Draymond. And Draymond then affects the team. And it's a big tree essentially going down because as soon as Draymond sit, then the rest of the team feels it, and it's awful about that. Meanwhile, on the other side, it's just about AD. Is he on the court and is he playing well? Game two, he did not play well at all. Game one and three here, he played just as he should. And that, that's a guy that we needed to see. That's what the Lakers needed to see to step up. I think LeBron was more excited about his kid in USC announcement.
Which,
how can you blame the guy, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's an exciting thing in a life moment. Sure, there's playoff ball going, but that's an exciting thing in a life moment. Like he said, he couldn't lose yesterday, even if they did lose. So I think he was maybe more in that, just that emotion stage still, which is why you probably saw him at 21, didn't score until the second quarter. And you know, he played 32 minutes still, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, still had a good game.
For
that stage. But I think it was just more of emotion. So having a guy like AD, having guys like Lonnie and Dennis and D'Lo step up in that moment here, I think that was huge. I think there's more, I don't want to say there's, in a way, there's more chemistry between these guys. And this might be, as weird as it seems, this might be LeBron's, at this moment, his best, chemistry-related team. Like, the guys seem to respect him a little more on this team than they did in the past. You know, even with the Heat, even with, you know, the 2020 Lakers, even with the Cavs, I feel like this team, you know, he doesn't, there's something different about this team. And I listened on the radio yesterday too, and they're talking about AD, right? And AD is the best player that LeBron has played with. And what I mean best player by LeBron has played with in this Heat is a guy that LeBron doesn't have to worry about not stepping up. He doesn't have to step up and score 30, 40 points.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be on the court sometimes, like we saw during his injury when AD came back. AD has actually, and I agree with this, AD has been the best player that as a teammate that he's played with. You know, you had your Miami days with Bosh and Wade and Allen. I still feel like Davis here, like Davis has been the difference maker in these teams. I mean, what do you think here? Do you think AD is probably that better player that, and not better, like not best overall, like talent wise or anything, but the best teammate that LeBron has played with
in LA? Yeah. I think Dwayne Wade's the only other guy that you could really even put in that conversation with LeBron. So I think what AD does is give them that presence inside. He can hit a jump shot outside. And I think LeBron needed that. He needed somebody to take the burden off of him a little bit and put it on him. And AD has done that. And the other thing is AD in the two wins has averaged 28 and 18. In the loss, he had 11 and 7. So to me, I think LeBron knows right now that the way they win games is to get AD involved early and to be able to create his own shot in the mid to late part of the games. And I think he knows that. And I think you're going to see that in game four, that they get AD off early. The other thing I will mention is the Lakers got better, as strange as it sounds, when Russell Westbrook left the team. It's strange to say and strange to sound because of what Westbrook did for the Clippers in the playoffs, but that's when they got better, because now all of a sudden they don't have to worry about Westbrook crying and moaning and everything else, and they can just freely play. So,
but they also required pieces that made them better that they were missing. Yes. You know, again, we talked about the Suns earlier with the depth point. They acquired a piece but lost their pieces. This Lakers team acquired pieces to make them better. Meanwhile, you know, they lost a piece. So I think that's the important thing of this too. A Beasley having to come into play. Who else was on that team, on that trade? There's a few others, but like the pieces that they have now is big. And that's exactly what this Lakers team needed to get back into things, even with LeBron being out at the time. So
yeah, and they have a Hachimura. And that's been huge for them, because he comes off
the bench. That can go off at any minute.
Yeah, off at any minute.
Exactly. By the way, how surprising this is too. Like, you have AD. Like, you already know AD is getting the ball down low, right? You have Draymond and Jamichael Green essentially out trying to cover him, both undersized to AD. Yeah. And then you bring in Kuminga, or not Kuminga. You bring in Looney,
who
can't cover him anyways.
Yeah,
right. And it's. Like you said, LeBron knows the plan. Get AD the ball down low, and he'll free up a shooter possibly as well. So,
trusting the teammates, that should even be more prevalent because of what AD did. So,
trusting the teammates is a lot different from what we've seen in past years for LeBron.
Yes.
So I don't know. Like, this series, I know we continue on. It's, you know, it's going to be one of those things. I think it just goes back and forth. I think they go seven. I don't know really. I don't really know who comes out of this here, but I'm not going to be mad if it's LeBron, because I think it'd be just a great story. Like, you came from nothing, you know, essentially nothing in the Lakers, to all of a sudden you're back at it.
Yeah, and so. And the thing about that this series is Golden State has to win game four. They cannot go home 3-1 because any type of emotional and less than poise in games, they could lose and lose the series. So they have to win game four.
I like it. And we got Tufel out here. What's up, Tufel? He goes, as per usual, I know nothing of basketball. But I said something insightful and funny while contributing to the viewers' numbers. Tufel, I always appreciate you no matter what on this. And he goes, nice stolen Tropicana mug. Nah, yep, he got you, Scott.
That's where I stay in Vegas when I go. So
that's awesome. Oh, man. All right, let's talk about this other series real quick here. I don't have much to say about it. Butler's back, and it showed last night. Miami, yeah. Knicks. You know, the Knicks was out Butler was out for game two against the Knicks. The Knicks won. No surprise. Butler's back. He looks healthy. He looks rested, ready to go. Thank you, NBA, for giving your players rest, I guess. Like, your schedule's so weird. But so do we have any worries here? Like, this is Butler's series, right? Like, it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely Butler's series. I mean, if Adebayo can play the way he played game three as well, Miami's going to be tough to beat. So yes. I know the Knicks are young. I know they're athletic. I know they're quick. But Julius Randle just hasn't shown up in this series. He's playing hurt, I think. And RJ Barrett has to carry the load. And I don't know if he can carry it with Brunson right now. So.
No, that's the thing is, yeah, you got hurt guys right now on that squad. And Brunson's beat up still. So, and he's performing the best he can. So like, this Knicks team it's not like they're like, oh, here's your real matchup now. It's not that, right? They just beat the number one seed in Milwaukee Bucks They beat the Cleveland Cavaliers
to move on.
And Donovan Mitchell is not a pushover kind of guy. Like, that was two or three tall towers down low. Like that was a good matchup to beat to do a 4-1 series win.
Yeah.
But you're beat up now. And you're going against a team that took down the number one seed.
Yeah.
And also a team in the past that has been really effective in the playoffs this late. So you're not going to be Butler here. I think this will be, a 4-1, 5-1 or 5-2 series win here. I'm not overly worried.
No, I'm not either. I think Miami will win game four and put it away in New York in five. So
there you go. Yeah. As long as Butler's on the court, it can be trouble there.
No doubt.
All right, let's talk about this series here. Now, before we get into it here, I want to talk about what your thoughts here on this Joel Embiid, the stomp, accidental stomp on Grant's head when he was going for the ball. Do you have any – do you want to prosecute him, or what do you got there as a Celtics fan?
No, I'm not going to prosecute him. It's just the way he plays. He did it. I mean, he did it with – I think he did it in the first series too, didn't he? Did he kick somebody in Brooklyn? In game three, and then
he
sat out game four because of his knee, and he might have got suspended. With Claxton. So, no, it's just the way he plays, and he clearly was frustrated. And after the game on the post game presser, he's clearly frustrated because he thinks his teammates didn't give the effort that they could have. They didn't get to the 50-50 balls. They didn't dive on the floor as much as they could. So he's clearly frustrated. He's a frustrated player right now, and the Celtics. He scores 30, but they play him very well. They make every possession a tough possession for him. So,
yeah, they did a lot. He did a lot better this time than his return on Wednesday. But here's the interesting thing on that Joel Embiid thing, right? Again, you talked about the 50-50 balls going after stuff. That was a pass being passed over to Joel. It was a tipped ball, and you saw him clearly. You know, he was trying to go after it because that's what a hard knows player does. He's MVP. You know, this guy could have easily been like the rest of the NBA players and just let it go, but he was trying to recover it as best as he could, and unfortunately two Celtics guys ended up sliding right behind him as he was trying to make his turn. So I got into this big Twitter argument about it, and this guy wants NBA to be suspended for life, and I just laughed. And it's like, all right, I showed him the video, and it still makes sense. So I was like, okay, dude, you win, I guess.
You must be a big time Celtics fan. So
that's what I was saying. I didn't ask him. I was just like, all right, dude. I mean, it really wasn't that. Like, you don't apologize. By the way, you also don't take out Grant when you have Tatum possibly right there. So,
right. Yeah.
Like, let's be real. All right. If it was going to be incidental, it would have been Brown or Tatum.
Exactly. Exactly. Then you'd have something with Brown or Tatum, but with Grant Williams.
Right. So we have Embiid out here 30. You know, Harden was 16, 11 assists. He's still doing his support role. But here's the thing. We talked about this Wednesday a little bit too, and I brought it up to a mindset of James Harden where it's similar to like a Russell Westbrook. It's like when you know you're not the number one person on the court, you're playing that support role. When you're not, like, Harden's done a lot better about playing the support role, but you're not, that's not your type. That's not what you are. Exactly. You are a all-star, a superstar. And we saw Harden without Embiid, right? Game one went off like just crazy. Game two, nothing. Like it was nothing remotely close to what we saw there. Right. And we've seen Harden do this when Embiid's off the court. Is it mentality issue? Like where you have to like adjust your role back to not, you know, go out for 30 and 15 for like a Harden or a Westbrook? Or what are you thinking here?
I think Harden knows when Embiid's on the floor, he becomes the quote unquote point guard of the team. And he's going to facilitate. And after the Brooklyn series, he said that's what he does. When Embiid plays, he becomes the point guard and has to distribute. When Embiid doesn't play, he has to take on the mindset of, I've got to be the leading scorer on the team. I've got to be offensive minded. I got to shoot the ball. So yeah, it's a mentality thing with him. And I think he's fine with it. I think he seems comfortable with it. He seems fine with it. I think in the back of his mind, he doesn't like it. I think he'd rather be the one taking 25 shots a game. But for the good of the team, he said he's got to be the facilitator in the playoffs because that's what Doc Rivers asked him to be. So,
but is it the good for the team? Is this a Doc Rivers issue where you're basically holding back a guy that's healthy? He looks way better than he did in the end of Houston and Brooklyn. Like, this is a guy who's shown can score 30 with another superstar on the court.
When Doc Rivers was in Boston, he had Garnett, Pierce, Allen. He didn't have to worry about that because those guys were unselfish and would do things to help the team win. And they were great. I think in Philadelphia, he's got two-thirds of a big three in Harden and Embiid. But for whatever reason, he wants Harden to be the facilitator of the team. And that hurts them. To a point, because Harden is geared as a offensive-minded type of player that he just wants to get the ball and shoot it, get the ball and shoot it. I think him bringing the ball up and stuff like that, I think it devalues what Harden could really do in the playoffs. I thought after game one, Doc would say, we have two guys. They're going to be the two guys that lead us, a la Durant and Booker. Score 70 points a game between both of them. But no, Doc Rivers go back to the role he's gone back to before. It hurts him. It really does hurt them.
It does. Because you got a guy like PJ Tucker who plays 25 minutes, only gets one board and 9 points, but two assists and a steal, of course. But Tobias Harris, another guy that we can see that could blow up anytime, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 block, and 7 points. Like you need to tell, like, this has to be, hey, this is a do or die situation right now. Become unselfish. Like, you know, if you can find, you know, do your facilitating, because he's really good at it. Harden is a great passer, great vision on the court.
No question.
But if you see the shot or if you see a way to make plays, go for it. Because I still think that you can get Harden 30 and beat 30 and still have great numbers without a lot of turnovers on this team. Because I don't think Maxey is going to be your difference maker. Your bench, you know, had to support you a little bit, 14 and 10 from Melton and Niang. And I don't see any of those guys on the bench being the guy. Tobias Harris, we know, isn't going to step up. And PJ Tucker's too old. He's just there to play defense. So, like, you have to have – I think you just have to say Harden. You know, Doc Rivers just needs to get over it. Say Harden. Hey, it's time to do your thing. With him being on the court.
Philadelphia's got Maxey, Melton, Tobias Harris, and a couple other guys. That could be the facilitator. Okay? Yeah. That's number one. Number two – this has not worked against the Celtics for the last 2 years. Them doing this has not worked. They beat the Celtics one time this year before the playoffs, and Embiid at 52 points, and the Sixers won by 2 points at the end. So it's not clearly not working. You need to change it up. And if you're going to keep doing it, you're going to lose the series. And Doc Rivers' seat is going to get warmer and warmer next year, because I don't think they'll fire him after this playoff second round. Gotcha. But I think they would fire him next year if the same thing happens again. So
that's what I'm thinking too. Tufel out here says, can you tell me what a triple double is beyond a giant cheeseburger? It's all right. So I'll let Scott explain the triple double for you.
Triple double is very easy. It's double figures in points, double figures in rebounds, double figures in assists. So if you have like
Joker all day.
Yep. As look at Jokic, 30 points, 17 rebounds, 11 assists, I think, last game. That's triple double.
Actually, 17.
Okay. I think it was. 17. They're very hard to get in the NBA, but they usually see it out of the Jokers and the Embiids and the, you know, Tatums. Usually see them out of those plays. Very rarely do you see it out of a Grant Williams or Malcolm Brogdon or a Tobias Harris, because they're not there to rebound the ball. So.
Yeah, it was 30-17-17. I had to go back and just 30-17-17. It's still insane. Like 17 assists, 17 boards, and you still get points? Get out of here.
It's insanely insane when you get 17 assists from your center in a game. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's why he's the two-time MVP before this year. So
is that, I mean, he shouldn't. Yeah, I guess Embiid did play majority of his game, so that's a plus. Give it to him. Yeah, for sure. So, all right, Celtics here. Let's talk about Celtics on this side here. Is there any worries for you right now? Seems like Tatum's back in the Howard. Like Tatum only played like what 19 minutes game two or whatever it was.
Yeah, seven.
They still won. It was like, hey, dude, you're cold. We don't need you. Just go ahead. Just go ahead and sit down, dude.
Yep.
Is there any worries?
Yep. No, especially if Horford plays the way he played in game three. I have zero worries about them. They just have Philly's number. It's a bad matchup for Philly. Philly won game one because the Celtics played no defense. But after that, Celtics have played pretty good defense. So, no, I don't have any worries in this series. I do have some worries in the Miami series, how they're going to cover Butler if that's the matchup. But if Horford scores double figures every game, there's no worries.
No, like you had 17, 7, and 5.
5 or 7 for 3 as well. Yeah.
What was that?
Horford hit 5 3-pointers in game 3.
That's insane.
You can't beat the Celtics when he does that.
That's the old Horford coming out right there.
It certainly is.
So 3 doubles. Now I finally know. You could be naming your local city council member. No clue. It's true. Oh, man. I think the Celtics team, I think they had this series just because of what we just talked about with the Embiid, Harden, Sixers, 7 situation where, you know, you restrict a guy that can score 30 that you're going to – I think this – Boston Celtics team is too well balanced. They did way too many moves in the offseason to cost themselves at this situation here. This is a team built to go to the finals, to go compete through at least 7 games with whoever else comes from the West. And it's going to be interesting, right? And Derek White stepping up as well with two assists, 6 boards, 13 points. All your starters had double digits, including Brogdon on the bench, coming off the bench there with 15. That's exactly what you need.
Yeah, the guy that doesn't get enough credit for Celtics is Brad Stevens and what he's done this year. He has really done a really good job at finding talent to plug into the system, and he hired the right coach. Mazzulla is a pretty good coach. He doesn't make adjustments as frequently as I'd like to see it, but they've done a really good job. So I give a lot of credit to Brad Stevens this year for what he's done.
Well, and then you also had, you know, you're able to go up to Brad at times, too, and get his advice, who was coaching the Celtics then, too. No, he knows all about it.
Yep, so, he does. You know, he does.
Props to him on bringing in the right support, the right staff, to be able to fill in on those weird situations that happened during this offseason. So, Brad Stevens, like, to be able to stay in this momentum after losing your head coach like that, it's huge. Huge.
And Mr. Beat. And Mr. Beat, since they had to get rid of Udoka, who's now in Houston. So I don't know how he's going to do that. But
so we talked about possibly Doc Rivers being canned either after this year or next year. But there was a guy that was canned after the round one exit of the number one seed, the Milwaukee Bucks. What do you take from that? Like, who do you think's coming in? What do you take from that? Is it because they won the championship, what, two, three years ago?
2 years
ago. We know how NBA is, right? Championships don't lock your job for 5 years. Championships lock you in for the next year, and then we'll see about that. And it's insane. Like, NFL jobs, if you win a championship, you're locked in. Well, hey, we're going to keep you around for 10 years. Yeah. Games and seasons, that's not a problem. We'll keep you around a little longer. It's fine. You won a championship at one point, right? So, but NBA is a whole different monster with their head coaches and the championship stuff. So what's your take here on this Milwaukee Bucks situation?
So lost to Miami in the first round, lost his brother during the series. His brother passed away. No Giannis for two games. They lost both games. Okay. That's kind of a tough goal to get rid of a coach when your superstar goes down for two games in a playoff series that you're playing Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat. So, Milwaukee management obviously had grander plans for this season. And Budenholzer, as always, the head coach is always the fall guy. So if the Bucks management thought they were going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or Finals, anything less would have got Budenholzer fired. Sure it did. It sure did. The tendency for NBA organizations is to not go after the star name now. It's to go after the quality assistant, i.e. the Celtics went after Mazzulla, Lakers Darvin Ham, not the biggest of names that they could have brought in, but that's the way they're going now. Former NBA players that can relate to the players that can get the most out of the players, and that's the way they go. Who they bring in?
You don't think Nick Nurse comes in?
Possible. It's possible.
Like you would think, like he took, you know, went in for the Raptors, they won the championship. You know, now they're kind of hoping the same thing here with this Bucks team. If they don't lose a lot of pieces, it's also, are they going to lose a bunch of pieces?
Well, that's the thing. If you lose Middleton and Drew Holiday off your team this offseason, or whoever's a free agent, I haven't really looked into this situation a ton. You're going to be hurting because, again, you're going to ask Giannis and Middleton or Giannis and Holiday to carry the boatload if two of the three are back. That's going to be a tough go. Brooke Lopez was great for them. I don't know if he can duplicate that. He's getting older now. But who they bring in, Nick Nurse would be one. Any hot assistant that was a former player, maybe a Sam Cassell, that would be another guy I would look at, you know, off the Sixers staff. I would look at one of the Celtics assistants too, try to make them a head coach. So any team that's out west, any Denver Nugget player, maybe Monty Williams is let go by Phoenix if they don't win another game in the playoffs. Maybe they can get him.
Yeah, who knows? That's true.
Who knows?
It's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how, because like you said, we'll have to look at the contract stuff, of course, but you do have a good roster. You have a superstar in Giannis there for a while. Yeah, it's very unfortunate how it happened there, but yeah, they had to have a scapegoat, I guess. And
well, here's an idea. We just talked about it. I don't want to see Nate McMillan, first of all. He's
at No.
What about if Philly allowed Doc Rivers to go there? I don't think it would happen. I think Milwaukee would look at that.
I don't think Milwaukee would, though. I really don't. I think after their stint with Jan or with Joel and everything like that in the Sixers, I don't think that they're going to go that route because there wasn't success with the MVP, right?
Yeah, that's
true. So that's true. Like you wouldn't want, like, I just don't think that would be a solid fit there. Right. But I guess also looking at too, you know, you might develop that roster. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens. I think Milwaukee waits till after the finals when everything's all settled. And then they find their coaches just after that.
They're on that edge right now. They could go forward or they could just crumble.
Yeah.
They're right on the edge right now in terms of what next year brings for them. So
it's a little wavy right now. It's a little wavy.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. All right.
So before we get out of here, let's talk here. Tufel out here has a question for us, a fun question. He says, if you could remove one team from their location and plant them in KC with a common red-yellow scheme, who would you pick and what new name, if any, would you give them? You have any idea on yours? I got one. Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, that's one.
Get rid of them. And we're going to bring them down to KC and we're going to call them the KC Blaze. And because that will support your red and yellow scheme. And that will also, you know, I don't know. I just think it'd be really cool jerseys on that too. Portland. So I'm going the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Who have done nothing in Portland since they became in the league. I mean, I guess they've done some stuff, but not enough, not to be consistent.
I am kind of surprised the NBA has never gone back to Kansas City.
Right.
Since the King, I think it was the Kings left, right?
Yep. Kings went to Minnesota, then Minnesota went to Lakers.
Well, the two locations is KC and Seattle. I'm surprised they have not gone back to either place. Boy, I maybe one of the Florida team, maybe Orlando.
Yeah, maybe. There you go. Magic.
Yep.
You call we can call it the Red Hawks. How about that?
That is a good question.
The Red Hawks.
That is a really good question. You have to really think about it for a minute. Portland didn't come in my mind at first, but yeah, that boy would what would be out in Portland if the Trailblazers ever left?
So Tuful, I did chat GPT it on some future names possibly with this color scheme. So here's what I had: Kansas City Blaze, the Inferno, the Heat, the Firebirds, the Gold Rush, the Red Hawks, the Sunbirds, the Red Devils, the Yellow Jackets, and the Fire Ants. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was interesting there.
Yeah.
So cool. Great question, Tuful. Always fun to do those.
That's an awesome question. Bring that up at the class sometime.
Right. I know, right? Scott, I know we got our collab show at 5 Central, 6 Eastern here on Let's Talk Sports. What else do you got coming up?
I think I'm making a guest spot on the Buffoon and Botkin show tomorrow night.
Yeah,
I'll be on there. Nick has other things, I think, to do. Tuesday's a baseball show for me. I might be on Let's Talk Sports all day. I might have the Allen schedule next week. So.
Oh, man.
So Wednesday is the Wednesday morning newsletter. Thursday's the Scott. I am until Friday. So
till Friday, yeah.
So I hope Dan Harris is staying big. Huh?
Yeah, your schedule laid out. That's for sure.
Yeah, I hope Dan Harris is giving me an extra big paycheck this week. So
extra bonus right there. More than extra 3 bonus. Shows a week. There you go. You're on. All right, guys. We'll be back tomorrow night for the Buffoon and Botkin show. Scott's going to join us. Nick's out trying to visit Johnny, see if they can meet up there. Good luck, Johnny. So,
lock your doors, Johnny.
We'll have Jim Beringer on, of course, to talk the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then Jonathan Grishman on to talk some MLB news as well, what's going on. So excited for that. Wednesday night, we'll be back here with the Buffoons here on Wednesday night. So make sure you guys tune in. Got great shows this week. Excited for it. Make sure you hit that like, subscribe, and hit the bell so you know when we're on. So everybody, have a fabulous Sunday. We will catch you all next weekend. See you guys.